Welcome to the Big Success Podcast, cutting-edge conversations on business and personal success, as well as how to level up. Here's your host, number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars.
And the Big Success Podcast today has Philip Hesketh. Now, not only is he author of Persuade and a couple other books, but the guy is renowned for being a great speaker. 20 years in the advertising business of, you know, helping companies get more business. Amazing knowledge around that, around getting customers. And some of the things he talks about how you persuade people. In fact, when he goes into his seven drivers, I think you'll want to take a lot of notes around that. His takeaways are very strong. Like, the guy's worked with all the companies from, you know, the most big companies in the world to the smallest of companies. But his whole take on the thing that stood out to me today is his take on how to go from good to great. So stay tuned, follow Phil Hesketh, learn from him today. This is the Big Success Podcast, and you're in for a big journey today.
So, Phil Hesketh, how are we doing, buddy?
Yeah, all's good, Brad. Thank you.
Well, it's good to see. You know, Phil, I've really wondered what was your perspective on this. I love having you on the show. What is success to you? Like, how do you define success?
Well, it's obviously different things for different people, isn't it? And so I can only talk from my perspective. A lot of my drive, I think, comes from within. So I kind of make my own definition for what success is with my own upbringing, my own limitations, you know, whatever that might be. And success is all about a journey. It's about setting a target and going towards it. That, for me, success is that journey towards the target.
Yeah. Do you think that's changed over time? Like, when you were a young man, did you have a different view of success, or how's it been for you?
Yeah, I do think that what you want for breakfast isn't what you want for dinner. And I remember when I left university and I joined Procter & Gamble, within a matter of weeks, I was looking for how can I be the number one salesman in the country? Right. And I sort of stumbled across this measurement system of displays. And I think somebody told me recently, they work for P&G, I still hold the record for the number of flash canisters on display in Britain. Now, it might not be a big thing to you, Brad, now, and it's not a big thing to me. But at the time, I just really wanted numbers. I wanted some significance. And I was the number one salesman for Procter & Gamble within 18 months. And so that was really important. Now it's not so much about that.
And what do you think shaped that shift? Is there something in particular? Is there a way of thinking, or what's changed that shift on success for you?
Yeah, I think that, let's take cars, for example. It's the outward sign of your success or failure in the world, arguably. And again, going back to Procter & Gamble, I got a Ford Cortina, and it had electric windows, Brad. Imagine that. You press a button, the window's getting down. And then you move on. And then I wanted a Granada. That was really important to me, to have a Ford Granada. Then a BMW. Then I got a 7 Series. But now, well, you know, I've kind of done all that. So for sure, and I use that as it's not a silly example. I think it's a good example of what drove me then isn't now what drives me. Now it's much more about relationships and friendships and people feeling like I've added to their lives.
Yeah. Now, here's the tough question, right? Do you think you would be as successful as you are today if your version of success now was your version of success then? Or do you think you would have been more successful or less successful?
I think, you have to define success, don't you? I think I would have been less successful, because if at the age of 21, 22, 23, just out of university, I thought success is having friends and good relationships with friends, etc. I would have focused on that, and that wouldn't have made me into the number one salesman for Procter & Gamble, where I wasn't treading on people, but it was kind of get out of the way. You know, if you're not part of the steamroller, you're part of the road type of attitude.
Yeah. So let's go back then. Where do you think in life you chose success? Was it as a young boy? Was it a young man? Where did you find the choice of success for you?
It certainly wasn't school or university. I did just enough to get by. I think once I started work, I realized there's some kind of measurement system. and I got married, so you want to buy a nicer house and, you know, have the nice things and the holiday and so on. So I think it was, I don't want to be materialistic about this, Brad, but I think I wanted success so that I could afford to do things.
Yeah.
I come from a fairly poor background, middle class, but a poor background. I just wanted so much more than that.
You know, it's interesting. The whole materialism thing does seem to drive a lot of people when they're young. And I don't see it as a bad thing. I see it as a strong thing to want to have the good things. I know with my kids, I've given them all the good things and now said, right, now you're off on your own. Go find a way to make it happen for yourself.
Yeah. And there's a disadvantage, isn't there, in being in any way a privileged child where you've only ever traveled business class. It's a hell of a drop down to economy once you've been used to business class. Whereas if you've worked your own way up from economy to business class to first class and so on, that's a satisfying journey. So I always tried to give my three boys enough to give them experiences, but didn't allow them to feel privileged in any way.
Yeah.
And they're now happy and up and running and so on.
Let's then talk about your philosophy on success. What do you have, a model or a formula, or how does success happen? What's your thoughts on that one?
Well, I've really had two careers, Brad. First of all, a career in advertising, did that nearly 20 years, run a business, and now 20 years as a speaker. The one thing that they've got in common as a thread, the thing that I would regard as being a success at, is getting new clients. And it's a lot of businesses, as you well know, really struggle on getting new clients. And that for me was always the satisfying thing, that I felt I was being successful when I was winning clients, particularly those who weren't expected to win. You know, we had an agency in the north of England, and we finished up with clients such as BBC and Disney and HSBC. And we weren't expected to do that. And that for me was the driving force for me. That's success for me.
So what's your formula then? How do you make success happen again and again and again?
Yeah. So funnily enough, the managing director of the agency I worked for approached me about 10 years ago and said, can I have breakfast with you, Phil? I want to. You're going to tap into your advice. Yes, sure. And he said, how do we get new business like you used to do it? And I said, well, I can tell you how to do it, but I didn't say this, Brad, but I felt like I said, you won't do it because it is constant. It's like always having antenna out. I used to do this thing of show me, you know me. And I saw this and I thought of you, constantly being in touch with potential clients. So that over a period of time, sometimes over many years, I used to say to people, I'm on the subs bench, I'm ready when you are. And that for me is the model for getting new business. So many businesses are short of business. So chase some business, have a degree of success and stop doing it. And then there's a bit of a lull. Oh, start doing it again. No, it's constant. It is like forever. Yeah. That for me is the model of success.
So consistency is very high on your priority to create success.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Knowing your goal, going for it. And if it takes time, fine, it takes time. But in terms of getting new clients, I think most businesses, in my experience, struggle to continue to get new clients because they stop the process, if you like, of getting new business.
Yeah.
It's forever. I can't help myself, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you flip that over then, how does failure teach success in your mind? How do we learn from our failures?
I think you learn from failure if you discover that you hate it.
I like that line. Tell me more.
Right. So we pitch for a piece of business and don't get it when I think we could and should have. And that hurts, Brad. It hurts in my soul. And that teaches me I'm not going to have that again. So put more effort in. Now, it's never quite as simple, is it? You didn't get that piece of business because you didn't put enough effort in. It's not a straightforward formula. But I used to say running a business, it takes a Herculean effort to win business. Anything less than that is not acceptable. So For me, what failure taught me, little bits of failure, losing an account, not winning an account, all those things, I hated it with a passion. That's what it taught me.
Dang. That level of intensity, I love it. I love it. I think that's brilliant. Listen, you're on the Big Success Podcast. We're going to be back with Phil Hesketh. We're going to talk about persuasion, influence, getting new business, delighting customers. Stay tuned for the Big Success. It's coming your way.
Business empires are where most people create the vast majority of their initial income and wealth. Through Brad Sugars' Entrepreneurs event, you will learn how to turn your companies into valuable and sellable assets. Visit bradsugars.com to attend this program as a standalone or as part of Brad Sugars' Entrepreneurial University.
And we're back. Big success is our way. Phil Hesketh, you are the master of persuasion and influence. I love your book, Persuade, by the way, the seven. We'll get to that in a moment. Firstly, what's the difference between persuasion and influence?
Okay, so I think persuasion is something you do to someone. Mm-hmm. You know, if any of the listeners, if you go home tonight and say, you know, guess what I've been persuaded to do, you don't feel good about that. If you ever go home and say, hey, guess what I've been sold today, you don't feel good about that. So I think persuasion is something you try and do to someone. And we don't like persuasion. Influence is something that you have on people, and you can be influenced by someone you don't know terribly well. But I think influence comes when you feel, buyer and seller, that you, I call it being in the canoe together. You're in this thing together, and you can influence someone because you feel like there's genuine interest from the other person.
So how do we succeed at influence then? How does someone become successful at influencing?
Okay, so I would say a lot of the time, a lot of people telling people it's what they want to tell them, and it's not what they want to know. Mm. So being successful at influence, and I, as you know, I have these 50 killer questions. It's all about finding out what the other person wants. Mm. What's the most important thing for the other person? What is it that they're after, and then helping them achieve that, and at the same time trying to slowly shift them to your point of view. So for me, the key thing is to find out what the other person's motivated by, what's important to the other person.
Yeah. So you've got, as you mentioned, you've got the killer questions. How does someone become a questioner? Is that just a natural thing, or is it a learned thing?
I think it's a learned thing. I think you've got to have a genuine interest in people. It's interesting, if I go back to my time with Procter & Gamble, I learned the 8x7, the 8 steps of the selling call, and the 7 selling tools. I could probably still do it now, but it's very much turn features into benefits. Wham, bam, thank you, you know. And that's not like that now. We've all wised up. So for me, the key thing is to... And I often say when I run sessions, if you only remember one thing from this, just ask a question. Yeah. Just if you're in a query, if you're in a, you know, ask a hypothetical question. But I do think you have to learn it, and then it becomes natural.
Yeah. So let's go to the top seven then. Let's start with the three big ones and help people understand that change or that psychology, that shift to becoming an influencer.
Yeah. So my 7 psychological drivers, the first three, as you say, are the most important. We all want to be loved. And by loved, I don't mean hugging and kissing. What I mean is I know what everybody's clients and customers want. They want to feel like you truly care. Are you interested in me? Do you love me? Secondly, we all want to be important. And that doesn't mean, hey, look at me. I'm the most important person. You know, often people recognize that they're a cog in the wheel. But they're an important cog. What they're doing matters. And then after love and important, we all want to belong. You know, we like to belong to groups. Everybody listening to this, Brad, will belong to a group. They belong to a ski club, a canoe club, a running club, a bridge club, whatever it might be. And when I ask people what's the most important thing in your life, they always say the same thing. They say family. Why is that? Feel loved and important and belong. And in terms of influencing people, if you can allow the person that you're trying to influence to feel like you truly care, that they are important to you and you belong, then you'll have much more progress. I often talk about the biggest single question you can ever ask in life is, will you marry me? there, in my opinion, there's no bigger question than will you spend the rest of your life?
You're probably correct. That's the ultimate sale.
Isn't it? Close that sale. And almost always you get a yes. Why is this? Because you've discussed the future. And you're basically saying, I think my future will be better with you. Do you think your future will be better with me? I love you. You're important to me. We belong. And so that's why they're the three most important fundamental psychological drivers.
Yeah. So how does someone succeed at that? Are there steps to each of those?
Yeah, I would say so. Again, the key thing is you've got to truly care. You know, and truly want to be interested in your clients, your customers, and so on. But it comes back to this questioning, Brad. You see, if you ask somebody, you know, what's the most important thing to you about the service we're going to provide? What's the most important thing to you about our relationship? Well, automatically the other person feels important. They feel loved, like you truly care. You feel like it's me and you together. Now, there are plenty of other questions, but, you know, for me, the most important thing is, what's the most important thing to you about?
Let's dive over to the other four then, because I still think, you know, even though they're not your top three, they're in the seven, so we got to cover them.
Sure, yeah. So they're not in really in any particular order after loved, important, belong. But one of the things we have to recognize is that the way the brain works is that once we've got a view and an opinion and a belief, we look for evidence to support the belief that we've got. That's the way the brain works. One of the things that's always fascinated me is placebos. And nobody really knows how they work, Brad. That's the truth. The best medics don't really know how placebos work. But what we do know is people have beliefs. And you have to recognize people have got a strong belief on something. You can't tell them that they're wrong. You've got to say, hey, that's interesting. What draws you to that conclusion? Is there any evidence to support that? So recognizing belief. Then we all want a balance of life in our lives of certainty and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to watch a rugby match, a cricket match, you're going to the theatre, whatever it might be, you want to be certain you've got a seat. You want to be certain what time it starts. You're pretty sure what time it'll finish. You want a certain way you park your car, but you don't want the certainty of outcome. There's no fun if you know the result of everything. It's like watching a movie when you've seen it before. It's like watching a football match when you know the score. So we like a balance of certainty and uncertainty. And if somebody doesn't want to do what you want them to do, it's because they're uncertain about something. There's something about the future they don't like. And then the final two are I've always found this fascinating, that people who run quicker. People who jump want to jump higher. People who play cricket want to score more runs. Everybody wants more. Everybody wants growth. And I have spoken at hundreds of sales conferences, as you have, Brad, over the years. And I've never yet heard a CEO or a sales director say anything along the lines of, hey, we had a good year last year, so this year, let's not worry. Que sera, sera. You know, whatever. Nobody ever says that. They always want more. Why is this? Because we want growth, because we're driven. And then finally, we all want a place. And for some people, it's a place of worship. For some, it's a position at Starbucks. I've always found it interesting. Whatever commute I do, and I've commuted along the northern beaches of Sydney quite a lot, on the Manly Ferry and so on, I always recognise I'm Johnny Newcomer. You have to see where everybody sits first before you sit down, because we like the same seat. If you're anybody listening to this, I'll ask this question. If you're sitting at home tonight, watching television with your significant other, I will bet you sit in the same seat you always sit in.
Yeah.
Why is it? Because we want a place. So those are the seven things that drive us, Brad.
Yeah. You know, I love those. And I think everyone should read more, especially Persuade. I think people should dive into it and get in depth and also do a lot of your online learning. Let's dive into getting new customers. What are the success factors to getting new customers?
Okay. So for me, number one is you've got to be realistic about who you're targeting. I think it's so, and I'm very conscious, Brad, you've got all sorts of types of businesses listening to this. But for me, you've got to know who your target market is, and you've got to tap into what it is that you've got to offer that is different to anybody else. And then persistence is everything. And making sure that all your details matter, that you're better than anybody else, and that persistently over time, you keep banging away on how good you are at what it is that you're doing in a way that appeals to that market. Personal view, Brad, I don't think you can over-egg this persistence of drive. It's typically not a one-off thing.
Yeah. So let's take that one step further then. One of the great things that you teach is how to keep your prices high or your fees high. What are the keys to success around high fees, high prices?
Okay. So if we take two types of businesses, the business to business, where there's an element of negotiation, it's one-on-one and so on. That's quite different to pricing in store, for example, which I'll come to. Again, if you, first of all, are brave, that's the most important thing. You know, I'll bet everybody listening to this, and I've had these experiences too, have had an experience in the last 12 months, at least one, where they could have charged the client more money and the client would have been quite happy because you weren't brave enough. Now, just being brave, obviously, is foolish. I'm not suggesting that. But I have got on occasions 4 or 5 times my normal fee because I didn't want to do the gig. So you're putting a ridiculous price. You know, everybody's got that situation. So for me, the most important thing is not to be bound by what other people are charging, but say, this is my price. It's more than everyone else. And when it's expensive, you say, yes, it is. But look at what you get.
Yeah,
because you can afford to lose some of the cheaper business. And again, that I could do a half a day on this, Brad, but so often I talk to people who say, well, I've been beaten back on price 3 times this morning. It's not going to happen again. No, the fourth call might be the one who doesn't care what it costs.
Yeah. I remember one of my first ever $1 million consulting per year or coaching per year clients was because, like, I don't really want to do this. Listen, it's $1 million a year. And they went, okay, that seems reasonable. It's like, okay. I guess I'm doing it.
Absolutely.
If we start to think then, the bravery is one thing. How do we back it up?
Yeah, sure. If you are a typical salesperson and you don't feel confident about the price that you're charging, then you've got to go through the process. And the process is a simple one. Question number one is always, what's the most important thing to you about the service we're going to provide? Now, there's plenty of other questions, but that's question number one. Question number two is, what are your expectations exactly? So let's find out what it is. And then say, your current supplier, what would you have in an ideal world? What would make things perfect for you? And they say, well, perfect would be X, Y, Z. Okay, does your current supplier do that? No, they don't. Okay, now you've got a gap. So all the time you're building value. But then importantly, I would say, working with salespeople all over the world, the biggest single reason they're not as successful as they might be and don't charge as high a fee as they might do is because they're frightened of rejection. We're just frightened of saying it will cost $12,000 or $2,000. They're just frightened of it. So you ask a hypothetical question. The hypothetical question is, look, if I were able to do all those things that are important, and if I were able to meet your expectations, is there anything else we need to consider? And typically people either say, no, there's nothing else we need to consider, or they say, yes, there is. So, and you can talk about that. So you can't get rejection.
Yeah.
But then you say, okay, hypothetically, if I were to say to you, this sounds like $12,000 per week or whatever it might be, how does that sound to you? You can't get a rejection to that because they might say, well, that seems like a lot to me. Okay, well, does that make sense, Brad? You're hypothetically setting the bar up here rather than just saying, well, our price is, and you could have charged more money. So it's the hypothetical question for me that's the key thing.
Perfect. Love that answer. You're on the Big Success Podcast. We're going to be back, and Phil is a genius at talking about good to great. So we're going to get into level up when we come back.
Celebrated the world over for his ability to entertain and inspire, Philip Hesketh reveals powerful, life-changing techniques to persuade, influence, and succeed in the workplace and in our personal lives. A successful businessman, best-selling author, and one of the world's most sought-after speakers, he has inspired audiences and clients in over 20 countries to increase sales, establish value to hold higher prices, and control conversations, building stronger relationships.
To learn more about Philip Hesketh, please visit HeskethTalking.com.
And you're back on the Big Success Podcast. I'm Brad Sugars. Today, I have the author of Persuade, Phil Hesketh, with me, sales genius. Phil, let's talk about leveling up. Good to great. Give me a perspective.
Okay. Well, let me give you someone else's perspective. There's a British economist called Leslie Hanna, and he's still alive. And in the year, I think about the year 2000 or something, he looked at the biggest 100 companies in the world in 1912. Okay. He looked at the biggest 100 companies in the world before the First World War, the year the Titanic went down. And then he fast forwarded 83 years being the length of someone's lifespan, to 1995, to see how many of the biggest 100 companies in the world were still in the list of the biggest 100 companies in the world 83 years later. And the answer is only 19. 81% didn't make it. So what do we learn from people who didn't continue that growth? And what we learn is almost always it comes down to complacency. You know this expression, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. It's complete nonsense. You get less if you just do what you've always been doing because the world is changing. So for me, this good to great is about two things. It's about looking for the next big thing. If you look at Microsoft and what happened to them when Apple came eating their sandwich, and I could give you dozens and dozens of examples. If you look at the fact that Kodak invented digital technology, but allowed something, et cetera, dozens of examples, Brad. So it's about the big picture, but it's also about what I call the TNTs, the tiny noticeable things. It's about never allowing complacency to set in. It might seem a small thing, this, but I don't like ever to go into an organization where the clocks don't work. If you don't care about the being on time, the clocks working, what else don't you care about? But if I interview, so I've interviewed hundreds of people, I always look at tips and toes, your fingernails and your shoes. If you haven't cleaned your shoes and you haven't cleaned your fingernails, what else don't you care about? So to summarize that answer, there's two things. One is, what's the next big idea? What is it that we're really, what are we striving for? But the other is always looking after those little things so we don't let complacency creep in.
So Phil, you've trained a bunch of people, work with a bunch of people. What's the difference then between someone who sets a good goal and someone who sets a great goal, like, you know, a million or a billion type thing? What's the difference in your perspective?
Yeah. Do you know, I think it's something about, I find this difficult to articulate, but it's something about ceilings. My sister, bless her, we get on fine. We've never fallen out over anything. She never set herself more than being an assistant manager at the bank. She just never thought that was possible. And I use that as an example. I have friends who are successful in that they earn good money, they have a happy wife, a family, etc., but just never thought they could do it. So I find it difficult to articulate, but I always thought we could be the biggest agency in Britain. Even now, I say I want to be the best speaker on the planet. Now, and I don't say that in an arrogant way, because I'm speaking to somebody who's, you know, can lay claim to that. It's more about saying, I want to be as good as I can be.
Yeah.
I want to get better all the time. So that for me is what that's about. It's not, I want to be, you know, I haven't got a measurement system of being a speaker in the world.
Yeah, it's interesting because I asked that question of a lot of successful people and the answer is very similar. You're saying it's almost just having the bravery to go for it or to even choose that.
Yeah, but also being driven. I do some work for Lexus Cars, and as a consequence, I was invited to play golf with Colin Montgomery. And And if anybody listening to this doesn't know who Colin Montgomery is, just say, you know, he was a very, very successful golfer, one of the best in the world at the time. And I said to him, what is it that drives you, Colin? We're just walking along the fairway. And I said, what is it? You know, you've passed the point of winning the majors. Now you're in the seniors. You've got enough money. What? He said, Phil, I can't help it. I'm just driven. And he summed up what so many people have said to me, because the nature of what I do for a living, I get to meet some famous people. And I ask them that question, what is it? And it's almost like an engine within them, Brad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think and it came from somewhere. And usually it comes from that decision way back somewhere as a kid, as a college kid or somewhere that they chose success. It's quite phenomenal that way. Let's get to the quick fire round. I want your thoughts, quick, short, sharp thoughts on this. How do you succeed at goal setting?
Well, you know, this SMART goals, specific, measurable, achievable, realistic time. Not a fan at all. I think it should be specific, measurable, awesome, ridiculous, and timed. So that, I mean, I set myself the goal of changing the weather in February, and everybody laughed. I said, no, I'm going to go and work in Australia. Who do you know in Australia? I don't know anyone, Brad. But I was just determined to do it. And if it's important, you find a way. If it's not, you find an excuse. And I had 17 consecutive years of January, February, March living in Australia till COVID hit. So, for me, the most important thing about goal setting is just don't set it with your normal parameters.
Love it. How about self-development? How do we succeed at self-development?
First of all, you've got to want to be better, haven't you? I'm surprised at seminars and workshops I run where I say to people, put your hand up if you're reading a book on self-improvement. Very, very few people. And I say, look, if you're not reading a book on self-improvement, there's only one or three reasons. Either you know everything, there's nothing for you to learn, or you don't care about your career, or you can't read. There aren't any other reasons. So read some more books.
Yeah.
Make a start.
All right. Well, how do you succeed at relationships?
Yeah. Isn't it? I've been married to the same woman for 40 odd years now. I have a good relationship with my kids, because if you said to me, bro, what's the most important thing in your life? It's my relationship with my wife and children. If that goes all to pot, then what's been the point of it all? You know?
Yeah.
So I think the thing about relationships is truly caring and doing the little things and saying thank you and doing things for people without not only not expecting any reward, but without them even knowing. I love helping people who don't know me and will never know me. I just kind of know within myself. And as a consequence, I think you improve your relationship.
Love it. Love it. So, Phil, you've had a lot of advice over the years. You've read a lot of stuff. What's the number one thing you've been taught, or what's the best quote you've ever read on success?
I thought about this. I think it's that just because someone's not on the same path as you, doesn't mean they're lost. So success for me is one thing. Success for you is another thing. Success for anybody I meet in the pub tonight. Success means a different thing for everyone. And I remember doing salary reviews and the agency, and some people just wanted to work in the accounts department, get home at 5 o'clock, because the dog was the most important thing in their life, you know? And it's okay that. It wasn't okay for me, but it took me quite some time, Brad, to recognize and accept that just because they're not on the same path as me doesn't mean they're lost.
Love it. Phil Hesketh, major author, does a bunch of online trainings. Please connect with Phil. Hit the buttons below. Make sure you are on his stuff. Thanks, Phil, for your time today. This is the Big Success Podcast. We'll be back again next week with more on how you succeed. And that's the Big Success Podcast for today. Hopefully you took a lot of notes. Hopefully you learned a bunch. And hopefully you're going to take action on it. BS, Brad Sugars, Big Success, take action. Check all the show notes for all of the links. So I make sure that you have links to every single thing that every speaker has in our show notes. Check them now. Click the links. Take advantage of it. And I'll speak to you again next time on the Big Success Podcast.
You've been listening to the Big Success Podcast with the number one business coach in the world, Brad Sugars. To learn more about how to achieve business and personal success, as well as how to level up or listen to past episodes, visit www.bradsugars.com.